Hey, welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I am your host, Neil Horowitz. You can find me on Twitter, NJH287, also on LinkedIn, where I post more content, the website, dsmsports.net, and of course, follow along on the podcast platform of your preference. Just a really, really good show for you guys today. I was just overjoyed as I was editing this interview. So many good insights, so many good examples to really draw out those insights. My guest on the podcast today is Bill Voth. You have definitely seen some of his work in the wild. He spent years with the Carolina Panthers as they really became a beacon of inspiration and insight for other teams and have led the way in a lot of ways. And that was part of the plan, as you'll hear Bill talk about. He wants to be a trendsetter. He wants to do things that other teams aren't doing. He's now on his own with Bill Voth Digital, doing his own work right now in the space. But Bill just has so many good stories and insights to share, really bringing out some important themes around empowering the social team, about speaking up if you're on the social team, because you can have all this knowledge of your channels and what works, what doesn't work, and making sure that communication is not siloed on just so much good stuff. So listen up, have a notepad handy because you're going to want to jot some stuff down. Here is Bill Voth of Bill Voth Digital. Right back with today's guest, and I'm so excited to be talking to him. I've loved our conversations, really good stuff. I'm joined on the podcast today by Bill Voth of Bill Voth Digital. Welcome to the podcast today, Bill.
Neil, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's I know you're so excited that you waited 200 plus episodes to finally bring me on. That's how excited you've been. You've been chomping at the bit for all these years you've been doing it.
I've been intimidated by your presence and your expertise. Yeah. And it took me a while to get the guts to ask you.
I recognize you. I think you're still using your same Twitter profile picture from when we got on back in 2000, whatever it was, 2008, 2009. I know we had exchanged messages 12, 13 years ago. You started doing the podcast, and then finally I got an email a few weeks ago. Hey, I'd love to have you on the pod. It's like, where you been all these years?
Oh, man, you're just dating us now. We are so old that we remember the days when Twitter was, just text only and all that good stuff. Oh, man.
Old and wise.
Well, Bill, so psyched to pick your brain on all your great experience and insights. But before we get into the meat of our discussion, tell us about you. Tell us about your career path, your stops along the way, and any tips for folks that want to work in the space.
Well, I started my career as a sports TV anchor. Did that for 10 years, started Burlington, Vermont, Richmond, Virginia, Charlotte. And then in about 2008, 2009, I logged onto something called Twitter, and that really just changed my life. It opened my eyes to, wait a second, the business I'm in. And I saw where it was going, but me telling you the news at 11:20 something at night wasn't really the future of this stuff. So I got really into social and digital, left TV in 2011, started a social media and digital video company called Spiracle Media. And in 2011, me and a couple former TV guys, we help brands, athletes, teams in those early days of social understand what this narrative building and storytelling was all about. But as I was doing that, I missed being in the media, and I saw there's an opportunity here in Charlotte to cover the Cam Newton era from a digital and social first perspective. So I started a website to do that. In 2017, they bought my website, brought me in to eventually help redo what they were doing from a digital and content and broadcasting side. Did that until this past spring. And this past spring, I stepped aside to start my own thing. Really wanted to create some space to go figure out what I was going to do next. But in the meantime, I was going to, hey, I'll start my own thing, be my own boss for a little bit again. I enjoyed it before. I'm going to see how that is now. And so that's what I'm doing now. I started an LLC creatively called. I mean, why wouldn't you want to have me be part of your creative services when I have such a creative name of Bill Voth Digital? So that's what I'm doing now. And I'm mostly in the content strategy space. I help organizations, teams, and other places build a really holistic content strategy that aligns with the brand's goals, aligns its goals with all of its digital touch points. I think too many businesses are disconnected and use a spray and pray approach on digital, which leads to wasted opportunities, energy, and resources. So I try and bring all that in. And it's hard being an outsider doing that stuff because you don't know everything that's going on internally. But still, I think I've been fortunate to have some wins over these first few months.
Oh, yeah. Let's take a step back. And when you were growing up or going into school, going into college, or starting those first jobs, was the dream to be a broadcaster for a team and do play-by-play? Was the dream to be on SportsCenter? Like, what was like the young Bill Voth dreaming of, daydreaming of?
Yeah, in seventh grade, I decided I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. A broadcaster from the Cleveland Indians stop by and talk about his day job. And it was like, oh, that would be cool to go just get paid doing sports. So that's what I decided to do. Got a paper out every single day so I could go to Syracuse, because, I mean, that's where people go a lot of times. I wanted to be the next Bob Costas. I fell short of that. Yeah, that was the dream growing up. Now, what I wanted to do specifically, play-by-play, radio, TV, I even liked writing a lot. But where I landed on as I went through school was I wanted to be that local anchor that you just knew, that you knew around town, because, yes, dating us, that used to be a thing. Right. You get your sports highlights at 6 or 11 and you knew that anchor, and we would show up at a game or whatever. And first of all, everyone kind of knew who you are. So that was fun part of the community. And also, if you're in a big enough market and you've been there long enough, you're making a lot of money.
Yeah.
That business, of course, has pretty much gone away now. But that was the dream.
Love it. And I always like hearing about the backgrounds of people that end up in the social and digital space, because there are different areas or different ways you can come up. Some people have that more, like yourself, more storytelling background, broadcast background. Some people come up more in the marketing space or the PR space, and there's no right or wrong way, or the creative space. And so like, how did you first come into social, and how did that affect, like, was it thinking about this is a different way to tell stories, it's a different way to put content out there, or was just, you know, you were kind of, I mean, I look at myself, I was kind of naive, like didn't realize how big this could get when I first jumped on and as brands started to join. Like, what was your first experience with, and how did your background and your skill set influence the way that you thought about it?
I would say, yeah, iPhones and Twitter is what changed my life. Mm-hmm. I'll keep referencing 2008 to 2009 because I can't remember. It was just right around there. I remember specifically standing at a practice, and my colleagues were laughing at me because I was on this thing called Twitter, and I tweeted that D'Angelo Williams wasn't practicing that day. And then 12, 13 hours later, I said the same thing on the news at night. And I was like, wait a second. I know like people are kind of rolling their eyes at this Twitter thing, but the way we're going to be sharing information is changing. Who is going to wait this long? Like, what? No one's going to wait this long. So I remember that. And then, the iPhone for me and recording video and getting it posted on this thing called Twitter right away also was a big eye opener. So in 2010, I went to the Olympics and I shot some stuff and sent it back to my TV station that they used on air. Cause I was, listen, yes, you're still using sat trucks. These are huge costs that you're spending on, but as the technology gets better, you're going to be able to do things cheaper, and all this stuff's going to change. So that's what really got me into it, as far as how technology is going to change the way we communicate with each other, social media being one of the avenues, iPhones being one of the tools. And then also back then I would try and tell my bosses about this stuff, and they kind of would laugh at me, roll their eyes. I asked to have my Twitter handle put on my lower third. That was, again, laughed at. And then back then I was like, because I wasn't this old, I was like, I vowed to myself that as I get older, I'm gonna listen to the coming generations, because while I'm going to always try and stay ahead of this stuff, the people coming behind me are going to know so much more and be able to be so much more nimble than I will be. And the worst thing that I could do is sit in that chair and be like, no, this is the way it's always been done. So I've been obsessed with what's next. Like, I don't care that this is what's being done now. I want people to emulate what we're doing. I want to be the trendsetter. And so as I've gotten older, I'm not the one who can really come up with the trends anymore. I'm not that smart. I'm not that socially savvy, but I would like to be the leader that can find those people who do know how to hit those marks and empower them to then become the creators. They're the creators. They're the ones doing it. And then also then inspiring them to be like, listen, the kid's coming behind you. You're going to need to get the hell out of the way one day too, because this is just, it's just going to continue to change and change and change. And we don't know where it's going to go. We just know that it's going to change.
Yeah. And I love the fact that I'm nodding and smiling because I know that philosophy carried out throughout your career and certainly with the Panthers of empowering the younger people below you to help you understand what's coming next and what we should be focused on. I've always taken the mindset myself that this space will keep you young because you have to, but to run towards the stuff that you don't understand or scares you, because if you if you run away from it, you're going to be the stereotypical old guy that wants things to stay the same they always were, because that's what's easy and comfortable and all that. But you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Sure.
Yeah. One of our jobs as creative leaders is to let the creatives below us or the real creators, the ones who are doers. I'm not a doer anymore. I used to be. Again, you don't want me making your reels or your TikToks. To empower them to, there's all this red tape above them in these organizations. There's all these meetings and all this other stuff. And it's your job to deal with all that stuff, to figure it out and to not micromanage them and to let them go create and be. And I think that that's going to continue to be that way in this business for quite a while.
Yeah. So I want to jump ahead a little bit to you talked about starting this site to cover the Panthers before you end up working with them. I think, was it Black and Blue or what was the name of the blog?
Black and Blue Review. Yeah.
Right. Black and Blue Review. So like when you started doing that, was it a matter of like, this is something that the team themselves is not doing, therefore I have this unique niche? I'm kind of trying to get at like the idea of team produced media kind of stood at that point and how it sort of evolved, especially it wasn't the same across every team. You and I have talked about this a little bit offline, how some is more sugar-coated than others, some is more biased than others, some is less biased than others. So like what did you see as the role for Black and Blue Review, and how did the Panthers organization see that when you came in and your remit there as a voice of the team or a voice about the team?
Those are all good questions. I don't know if I'll be able to answer them all as I ramble here going forward. Let's start with there's at the simplest form, there's two tracks. There's the outside media and then there's the team. It's weird that I have these specific memories, but in 2010, I was at the gym and I went to one of the Spiracles co-founders who was there as well. And I said, one of the next big things is, right, like the beat reporters, the daytime radio people, I was wrong about that, kind of, the local TV folks, like those jobs are dying. Those businesses are dying. So all these reporters who cover these teams in these markets, they have to go somewhere. And you know where they're going to have to go? They're going to have to go to outlets online. So that's like what we should start. So that was the Athletic. That was the idea that the Athletic was able to take it on with. And I wasn't able to be business savvy enough to figure out how to do it back in 2010. But I say all that because here in Charlotte, yeah, you have a local media that was acting very linear, very just how it was for a very long time. And I would be sitting there at a Cam Newton press conference and I'd record it on my iPhone and I'd cut it as I'm sitting there and I'd post it to Twitter right away, as opposed to the local TV cameras, which are recording it. And then you might be able to see it on your local news hours later. That didn't make sense to me. So first of all, there's an opportunity there to get stuff posted. Let's go like right away for this growing digital audience that wants stuff like right away, not waiting to get their news or their information or their sound bites. From a team perspective, the Panthers were slow to adapt to a lot of this. Former ownership didn't really get it. It wasn't really a priority. With that said, the president at the time, Danny Morrison, and then our mutual buddy, I'm sure you know him, Dan, I think you would call him a buddy, maybe not, Dan LaTaraca, they got it. They understood. I think the Panthers have had a good reputation in the digital space for quite a while. Dan's the one who started it. Amy Keene's the one who then took that ball and ran with it and so on and so forth. But the team wasn't really covering itself well either. Dan could only do so much. Dan had a great vision, but a lot of the folks around him, it was still like linear TV. It was coaches shows. It was 30-minute shows. And Dan didn't have that content that could be posted right away and digital first and social friendly. So that's one of the things that I was brought in to do was, hey, we need to take this from a linear based philosophy to a digital and social first. And that's not a ship that you can steer quickly. It takes quite a while. It takes buy-in. But we were fortunately able to do that after a year or two.
Like, how are the objectives kind of positioned then? I mean, I think we take it for granted, again, to date ourselves a little bit. You and I are old enough where there wasn't really metrics in the early days. I mean, kind of. You could get an idea of like, oh, how many retweets did this get or how many likes did this get? But it wasn't a systematic, let alone with all these third-party analytics platforms. And just a better understanding of how this all fits into the strategic picture. I mean, even if you look back on the old traditional media, some of the metrics there are far from exact and far from strategic, even in that sense. So, like, when you were brought in, and even as you grew the operation there with Dan, with Amy, like, what were the strategic objectives at place? Like, were you trying to sell tickets? Were you trying to create new fans? Were you trying to create a global brand? Were you trying to attract sponsors? Like, what were some of those goals, and how did that affect, you know, what you were able to execute and how it played out?
Yeah, depending on your perspective, we were either fortunate or not fortunate, because we didn't have to be all that sophisticated. We weren't. We were starting so far behind, and also we didn't have to do the ticket messaging. The Panthers are essentially always sold out, so we didn't have to pump in a lot of ticket messaging. Our main remit was connect with the fans, build the fan base, connect with the current fans. And we were fortunate. We had players, we had a head coach who got it, but we had players who were stars who connected with the community. And it was inform and connect and give this fan base something to be really proud of, which is Panthers on digital and social being tremendous. And also one of the reasons I was brought in was to bring a certain credibility to the website and to our voice. It was not cheerleading. The voice was, Amy, I think Amy used to term it as like kind of like the cool kid in school, but not the like too cool kid in school, but like the one who would hang out with all the jocks and the nerds and whoever, we just kind of got along with everyone. So that was kind of the voice. But also we weren't like, hey, you know, Panthers lost 40-10, but hey, special teams played well. Like, we weren't doing any of that stuff. We understood, like, there's ups and downs, and with the downs, we're going to be with you, and we're not going to feed you a whole bunch of crud. So we really understood what the fan base was feeling, and we didn't try and force feed positive feelings when there weren't positive feelings. And then when there were positive feelings, of course, we jumped on that. I just think what Amy and the team did when the Panthers traded for Sam Darnold a few years ago, they just threaded a needle so perfectly where they weren't trying to sell the fan base that Sam Darnold's going to be the quarterback coming in here and going to save everything. But they also weren't like, hey, here's the new guy. He may or may not work out, but here's some fun things to know. And here's some like some ways to humanize them a little bit, but they didn't like QB1 and all that other stuff. Like, come on, just stop. And so we were really able to thread a needle. We were not cheerleaders, but we really were just transparent with people, and we went on the journey with the fan base. And I think that really bought us a lot of credibility for a while.
Yeah, and we take it for granted that there are some teams that don't embrace that kind of that mindset, where it is more sugarcoated. It is don't say anything that could be construed as potentially not 100% positive. And like, there's some interplay between PR and comms and digital and social and the team ops as well, and what they're feeling. And of course, ownership will have their say at times. So like, is that just something that like you guys found that there was more success? You got more engagement when you were more transparent with fans. Like, what's stopping more teams from doing that? Is it, you know, I don't want to say is it PR getting in the way, but is PR getting in the way? Or are there just things that you can justify saying, hey, if we don't give fans the truth, they're going to go somewhere else to get their coverage of the Panthers, because they know that what we're giving them is heavily biased and heavily sugarcoated.
Yeah, I that's a great question, and we could go on hours for. So I'll try and just keep my answers as short as possible. I don't. There's so few organizations that are willing to do that, and if you are going to do that, you have to have a really strong owner that's going to listen, like, the buck stops here. This is what we're doing. So the Cowboys do a lot of stuff that would make a lot of teams uncomfortable. Like the whole Dak Prescott tweet last year, I rolled my eyes at it, because like there's nothing wrong with it. But of course, people aren't, oh, I can't believe a team would do that. Why? Like, Dak didn't play well. The Cowboys didn't play well. Why are you shying away from it? Like, that's like, yeah. So why would anyone come to your website if all you're doing is sugarcoating stuff? Like, that makes no sense. So all these tools are out here to be able to, for you to tell your story. But if your story is like a corporation, then like fans can see through that. So they're going to stop listening to you, especially when you need them. When you actually need to sugarcoat some stuff, well, now you're the boy who cries wolf. Now they're not listening to you ever. But going back to your other question, I knew I would miss some stuff, but let's be honest, like the whole reason we were connecting with fans and trying to build up engagement numbers is of course to be able to monetize off of that stuff. That was another thing that we started quite far behind as far as an infrastructure of how you could monetize content. And there's still quite a long way to go. But of course, the more you can monetize, the more staff you can bring in. The more staff you can bring in, the better content you can do. The more better content you can do, the better sponsored content you can do. And it goes around and around and around. It feeds itself. So I am a big believer in, if you can do really great content and you can make a lot of that branded or sponsored content and you can really build up your numbers, you can do even more branded and sponsored content. You can make money. The content people are happy because they're doing good content. You can actually do good sponsored content, not just check the box sponsored content. So that was a big part of what we started as well.
Yeah. I guess because we're talking about now, how did sponsor content look for the Panthers for you? Was it just, did you have people that were digitally savvy on the partnerships team? Did you guys, you know, collaborate really closely? Was it a bit of an evolution with early on, maybe it was a little more brought to you by Logo Slaps and then got more mature as you went along and saw what worked better? Like, how did it play out there? And, you know, how do you see it today even?
Yeah, you know Mike Mahoney, one of the at Mahoney on Twitter and other social platforms, but he's been a very socially friendly sales guy in the NFL for quite a while. He understands the space. But when I got there, it was like most teams, and I think a lot of teams are still like this. There wasn't a lot of communication between the digital department and the partnerships or sales department. And so a sponsorship would go sell something, and then the digital team's told they have to go do this. And the digital team's like, well, this is crap content. This isn't going to work. So it's bad for your channels. And then it's also bad for the sponsor. So we took some inspiration. I think I have his name right. The Falcons had someone many years back, a guy by the guy name of Chris Jones, I think his name was.
Yeah.
And that was like, oh, he's the bridge between sponsorship and between the digital team. So we hired someone, I want to say 2019, her name is Sam Bear, to act in that role. It's not an easy role. It's very difficult because she's got both sides who a lot of times are angry at each other, right? You go, why do I help? So, but it's really, it's making that communication better and having the digital folks much more part of the sales process. Because again, if you can do good sponsored content, but if the salespeople are just out there selling stuff or it's just logo slaps, and then the digital people are being told what to do and here's the messaging they want, well, that doesn't work. Put the social people in the room and they can help ideate. They can, right, they can help make it all better so it works better on your channels and it works better for the sponsor. Because if you're just putting up crap sponsored content, it's not going to perform well, but hey, at least the sponsor got the copy they wanted, but that doesn't help anybody. So that was a big part of what we tried to do, is at least help that process out a little bit more. I think we could have done better. But I think we still did better than some other teams. I think some other teams still don't have, that direct bridge position. And I think that's one of the more valuable positions in an organization. And I don't think enough organizations value those positions. I think that bridge, it could become more of a department, more so than just a role.
Yeah, you know, it's great insights, great call out too. I also distinctly remember Chris Jones, that unique position that he had, digital partnerships, and it was so cool to me to hear about it. I think he moved on to Publix. I forget where he is now. To your point, like, it's like, if you want to ultimately, both sides should ultimately want to create content that fans enjoy and fans want, and you want content that you can be proud of. And if sponsored content is shit, then no one's proud of it and no one's happy. And it seems so logical, and yet it still does take some evolution and some people that may disagree on things at times to get to that point.
And you gotta, and this sounds cheesy, but you have to understand, like, you are on the same team. So I think there's a lot of sponsorship or sales. And it's like, well, yeah, because you're so used to being told to do crap content from those departments. Well, let's work together. Let's get together. And let's actually understand, like, we're on the same team. Let's actually work together. It's really bringing people out of their silos. And I understand not everyone in each department can do that, but that's why having at least one bridge person and just having better relationships between the digital and content side with the sales and sponsorship side, just in general, and understanding that neither of you are the enemy. Like, the sales folks are upset because digital doesn't want to do this. The digital folks are upset because sales wants them to do this. But, like, when you have adversarial relationships like that, that hurts everyone. And it's just, it doesn't have to be adversarial. Let's do cool stuff together. It is possible.
Yeah, it shouldn't be we interrupt our normal programming to give you this crappy commercial content. Yep. And then we'll get back to normal stuff after. Yep. Something I want to talk about too, for sure. Here, having a great conversation here with Bill Voth of Bill Voth Digital, talking about his lessons over the years. Something that you guys did, I think, way before almost anybody. I mean, nowadays we see the mini mic content. We see people walking around and going and asking players and talking to them and interacting with them, and it feels like you're there, like you're a friend with them. And I have these vivid memories of some of the Panthers content, whether it's like walking around an airport. I have some really vivid like pictures in my head. And you guys were kind of doing that like mini mic style interaction with players before it was cool, before TikTok, before all that. And so, like, how did you guys foster that kind of relationship, that trust? I mean, you talked a little about, you know, Ron Rivera and also team ops on that side. So what was the process like of getting that buy-in, getting that trust, both with team ops in general, as well as with individual players? And how did you know kind of like what worked, what didn't work? And just give me an idea of how that came together, because it really was ahead of its time.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, the ecosystem I wanted to build was let the social folks just go and do. And just go. If it fails, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But like, the only way we're failing is if we're not trying things. And so it was giving them just a lot of freedom to just go try stuff first and foremost. So, fortunately, like I got the hell out of their way and they could just go mess around with stuff. So Angela, and I'm going to mispronounce her last name. It's not Denogene. And I worked with her for many years and I still cannot pronounce her name correctly, because she has an accent with it. So I'm not even going to try. So it's Denogeon. But she, I swear, she started the mini mic trend. I believe she was the first one that brought mini mics. But anyway, she was our social number two. And she brought a mini mic in once and started taking it down into the locker room and started messing around with it. And it grew from there. But yeah, so it's just, I think it's having an ecosystem of try stupid things, try fun things. And when you have people like Amy Keene and Angela who are like, okay, let's go play in the sandbox and let's try this, let's try that. You're going to have a lot of times, a lot of that content's going to hit. And you can set trends. And that is definitely one of the things we tried to do for years at the Panthers was, okay, this team's like, if a team is doing something, like, I automatically didn't want to do it. So I didn't have a hard and fast rule. Don't use The Office. Don't use SpongeBob. Don't use talking heads like Max Kellerman and all this stuff. Don't use L's. But I was very much like, hey, can you try and not do content with that stuff? Because everyone else is doing it. So if your win graphics have an L, like, you're not being different. And our whole thing was, what are we doing that's different from the 32? That's what now we weren't always successful. And every once in a while, we would use SpongeBob or we would use The Office. But it was our philosophy was, what are we going to do that the other 31 are not doing? And so stuff like the mini mic is, that's how, if you create an ecosystem like that, that's how you can generate content like that. But if you're copying other teams and you're doing what other teams are doing, we stopped doing signing photos. We, going into the COVID free agency, we said no more signing photos, because every team and every sport does signing photos. So why would we do that? So in 2020, before COVID kicked us out of the building, we were going to do the whole when tennis players sign the camera, we were going to do something like that. So instead of a standard signing photo, the player comes in, signs the camera, and that's the whole, hey, they've signed. We weren't able to execute that until 2021, and then we did it again in 2022. But yeah, that's it's how do you not do what everyone else is doing? It's not easy. And a lot of times you are going to do what everyone else is doing because a lot of that stuff works. But really, it's being obsessive about what can we do that other people are not doing is how things like Mini Mike start.
Yeah, the whole like Purple Cow mindset kind of let's stand out from the crowd. But even the fact that you guys got the buy-in from players and were able to showcase their personalities as a result, and you're going up to them and it wasn't weird to not ask them about, you know, what drills you're working on in practice or what's your game plan. It was just like the fun stuff that we take for granted. Now, these aren't specific examples, but like the whole like is a hot dog a sandwich, or like tell me about about your outfit or what your favorite coffee orders, like the stuff that you got to know players that maybe 10 years ago a team would have been like, wait, we're not talking about X and O's, like what? Like did that just feel natural, feel organic? Like how did that come about, and how did you make sure that the players were open to that and coaches were open to that?
Yeah, I think it's empowering your digital and social folks to go down in the locker room and just be normal and human with these players. So when I was brought in, one of the things I was supposed to be was the face of the website, because that was my background. But it was around 20, it was when the Panthers drafted DJ Moore, and I was doing some stuff with DJ, and it wasn't his fault, but it was like, I'm not feeling a connection here. Yeah. And it was like, you know what? Like, I'm the old white guy. Like, that's just the reality. I'm the old white guy. And DJ Moore is not, I'm not going to get as good of content from DJ Moore as a younger, probably more diverse content creator can get. So that's why it's, and we were really intentional about diversifying our department the past few years, not only because it's the right thing to do, but also because it gets you better content. Because our social folks get better stuff out of DJ Moore than I could. Now, again, it goes back to me having those bosses who never wanted to change. If you have these team reporters, these older team reporters who have always been there, and this is how we do it. I need to be in the locker room. I need to be holding the microphone. I need to be asking the guy, so how was practice today? Like, that's not good content, and fans don't care. What fans want is Mini mic stuff. What fans want is players interviewing players. This is why you see all this athlete-led or former athlete-led content blowing up all over the place with Silver Tribe Media or Audible and all this stuff. Now, Colin Kelleher, you have to be a Colin Kelleher. If you're not a former player or something like that, you have to kind of just be way out there like a Colin Kelleher. But this stuff needs to be athlete-led. No longer should it be. And not to say like old white guys like me deciding what the content needs to look like or me having to front the content. I don't know, and I hate to say this, I shouldn't say it out loud. I don't know how much of a place team reporters really have anymore, to be honest with you. And when I got there, like, we need to do these, let's bring the talking heads together to have these draft specials. And it was like, it's so boring. Like, no one cares what I have to say. Let's have players come on and talk, and let's have former players come and talk to each other. Cause you know what? Fans are more interested in them. And also they know a lot more what they're talking about than I ever would. So long-winded way of trying to answer your question of how that became organic. But I think it's letting the younger content creators go and just connect with these players as opposed to what old traditional media has always been. Being very intentional in your diversity for many multiple reasons. And then understanding that content has to look different than it has in what people like me used to consider good content.
Yeah. Let's double click on that a little bit. And I'm going to keep you as long as I can, Bill, because there's so much good stuff here. I think there's still a ton of teams out there that check the box and they're going to do their game preview. They're going to do the game recap. They're going to put out their game notes, perhaps. They're going to give you that draft preview because they at least in their heads, or maybe it's true, there is at least some non-zero subset of fans that thrive on that. They're going to get a few hundred clicks to the page views or whatever. So like when you're thinking about that content mix, I'm not going to say pillars necessarily, but thinking about like, we're planning out content for a given ten pole or a given week of games. Like, is there a certain set of like, okay, we do want to do a little bit of coverage here. We want to do a little bit here. Like, what guides like the what you guys are going to put time into? What's sort of some of the more just automatic stuff? And like, are we going to get to that point where like we're not going to do a game preview because, or at least we're going to rethink how we do it because there's more fans that want it this way than the fans that want it this way. Even if there's still some fans that want it the old fashioned way.
Great question. And there's not an answer for it. It depends on the market. So a lot of my philosophy, what I've just been spewing about, is market specific. In Charlotte, I did not believe there was a big enough market or a place for 30-minute coaches shows or 30-minute highlight shows. If I was doing content in a Cleveland or a Pittsburgh or a Green Bay or in a Dallas, there is absolutely a market for that type of content. It's specifically to the Panthers fan base. And I think that's why in these jobs, you have to specifically know what your market needs and requires. So my philosophy is what I've been talking about here. To be clear, it's specific to what the Panthers needed at the time and where they should have went from a content perspective. To try and answer this question, because I didn't think that X's and O's content, by and large, really hit all that great with this fan base. Yeah, I think being different and funny and fun was we leaned more on that stuff than, okay, the Panthers won this weekend. Let's break down what happened. You get a few people reading, a few people clicking, a few people watching, but the fan base isn't big enough to draw on those numbers that you'd really want if you're going to spend the time to make content like that. In that, now, if you go up and you look at what the Eagles do, the Eagles do such an incredible job of mixing really smart X's and O's content with fun content, and it's required up there. And if you're spending the resources to do X's and O's content, those are resources being spent somewhere. Totally. The Eagles fortunately have enough resources. We had the resources we had. And I felt it was best to focus on the things that would engage our specific audience the best. And that was being different. And I think that started with Dan and Danny, when Panther Social started to become a thing. Like, let's be honest as well. The Panthers in the scope of 32 don't make that big of a dent. So if you're going to act like a traditional team, if you're going to act like the Bears and the Packers and all these teams that have bigger fan bases, then how are you ever going to stand out? You have to be different. You have to be irreverent. You can't take yourself all that seriously. And so, again, so much of this stuff is market specific. So if we were stodgy and we were serious and we tried to break things down and X's and O's and da 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 da, like, the Panthers were never going to make a dent. The Panthers had to be different to make anyone ever care about them.
I think it's really well put, and just it rings so true. And let's talk about how that emanator manifested itself with the personality and the voice as well. Because throughout your time there, and a lot of teams can relate to this, that there's different coaches that come in, different GMs that come in, different marquee players that come in. I mean, hell, even different owners for your time there as well would come in. And yet the Panthers still seem to have a fairly consistent voice and personality. So first, I guess, how did the personality and voice come about? How formalized was it? And how did the various regime changes affect it, if it did, over time?
I mean, honestly, it's a credit to Dan Lautaraki. He's the one who started that. And then when I came in, it was like, well, don't screw up an already good thing. And then Amy took over the channels and continued that voice and put her own spin on the voice, and now Angela's done the same thing. But Dan's the one who started it. Again, like, Dan's the one who understood, like, we have to be different, like, we have to be cheeky, we got to take some shots when we can. So that wasn't any great thing that I came up with. That was just, hey, this is what's working, of course this makes sense. I don't have a great answer for that, except to credit other people.
Was it a matter of having to get buy-in, or did as new GMs, new coaches, new owners came in, they're just like, keep doing what you're doing, it's working, and I'm going to keep hands off? Or is there a role, even in general, beyond the Panthers, like, from your perspective, is there something to team ops, GMs, owners setting the tone, or at least approving of the tone that the team's brand is going to represent, essentially, on social?
Absolutely. And it's my bad for not even addressing that part of your question, probably because I don't want to go down that road, because you shouldn't talk too poorly. But yeah, whenever you get a new head coach or a new GM, it's essentially like spinning the Price is Right wheel. And a lot of them are like the black spaces or whatever. And then there's the, I think it's like a red and a green or something. Maybe it's a green and two reds or something like that. So you spin the wheel, and usually you're going to land on a coach or GM that's going to be, it's not going to be all that easy to work with. So we spun the wheel a few times. Someone like Ron Rivera is definitely one of the money spots. Someone like a Scott Fitterer, the GM, is definitely one of the money spots. But I won't say any names, but a lot of times if college coaches come in, they bring in, and if you have some listeners here from the college space, they'll understand, they bring in a much different philosophy than, hey, just let the creative department go. A lot of these coaches, the digital and social is so important to what they do because of recruiting, they have control and power over it. So sometimes a college coach might come into a professional organization and say, well, I need to have power over the digital and social department and see every post that you post ahead of time, which of course isn't going to work in a professional organization. So we may or may not have had to deal with that for 2.5 years. And that did affect our voice. Those were not easy times, but a lot of teams are dealing with that stuff. You look at the Raiders, the Raiders are going to be going through what number of coaches. So I think it depends on your situation. You know, if you have an owner that's going to tell a coach, sorry, you're going to leave them alone, this is what we do here, which I think probably is what Jerry Jones does. I think it's funny that the Patriots, a lot of the stuff the Patriots write, and I'm probably speaking out of turn here that I don't know, a lot of the stuff the Patriots write is, wow, that's interesting. They're writing. Now, I don't think they have a great relationship with the football side. But I do think Robert Kraft gives them some freedom to say, hey, you can write the truth here. So a lot of it, I think, depends on owners. But you were correct that you never know what you're going to get with the coach and GM. Some will play nice. Some won't care. Some will want control. And you just have to build as many good relationships as you can and try and work with that as best as you can.
Yeah, and it affects a lot of things. It affects access to the locker room. It affects how quickly you can execute and different ideas you can pursue. And it's something that maybe is a little bit more inside baseball than some of the fans that are just consuming the content every day really have to think about.
Yeah, I mean, what's amazing is, you know, it's funny because you'll still see comments like, give that social intern a raise. And these social professionals, they are so important to these organizations. They're the front door of these organizations, which gives them so much power. It gives us so much power. With that power, of course, comes tremendous responsibility. With that responsibility comes everyone in your organization has an opinion about what you're doing on the front door of your organization. So every department is like, why aren't you doing this? You need to do this. And everyone has an opinion on stuff. So these jobs, while everyone thinks they're fun, they also come with a whole lot of second guessing and pressure from all parts of the building. And that's where someone like me comes in, which is trying to fight those battles before they really get to the social folks, the ones who are executing, so that they can go execute and they have the freedom to go be. And in certain iterations of my job, I wasn't able to win some of those battles.
Yeah, it's reminding me. I think she's a VP of social for ESPN. Her name's escaping me right now. I'm trying to quickly look up Katie Daly, who says, everyone drives a car, but if you ask someone to work on the car or go under the hood, not everyone can do that. And so it's a little bit similar analogy of social media. Everyone uses social media. Everyone can use it, but when you ask them to actually go under the hood, it takes a specialized skill.
I'm very partial to the social media managers. It probably rubs some of my video folks, some of my graphic folks the wrong way. Not in photographers, not saying that they don't have a say at all. Of course they do. But I want my social folks to be the leaders because it's your channels. You need to be telling all of us what you need to be telling us ever what piece what content will work best on your channel. So I believe that social folks need to have, you have to allow them to have one of the loudest voices, if not the loudest voice in the room. The social media managers, it's so vitally important through crises. They need to be in all these meetings. And I still think that social folks are still left out of way too many things that organizations try to do when it's like all this stuff is being judged on what you're doing socially and digitally. Why aren't you including the people that know your channels the best?
Yeah. A couple of minutes left here, Bill Bowles. I'm going to indulge myself because this that point you just made is something that I've carried with me throughout my career. Early on, I realized that, and I'm speaking out of turn a little bit, but as a social media manager, you internalize so much insight into your fan base. You read every comment. You see every reply. You see how every little piece of content resonates or does not resonate. And it's like, and you're sitting on this gold mine of insight. And it's like, how, what do you do with it? How do you make sure it gets to the right people? And whether it's, you know, a big trade happens, or sign a new player, or we try a new content piece, or we try a new direction, or even a promotion that we're doing about the game. You internalize so much insight, and yet we're still trying to extract all that value. Like, is that something that you noticed in throughout your time in those roles and around those roles? And is there a solution to taking all that insight? Maybe we're getting better now with more advanced listening tools and whatnot around what the fan base and sentiment is like. But like, how do you take all that and make it actionable, or at least communicate across the organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends, because people like me are in those meetings. But people like me are still like, well, yeah, I know a lot, but like my social folks know even more than me. And with that said, a lot of times when you are reading all the comments, as we know, a lot of that we can overcorrect. And yeah, listen too much to what
represents the vast minority of the fan base at the end of the day.
Yeah, like a lot of times that's not reality. So you have to filter through and make sure that you're always going through a filter of what reality is. Just because fans are complaining about this doesn't mean that it's actually reality. And I think you can overreact to that and sometimes be too sensitive and not pull some levers because you're afraid of this, but you know, all this other stuff. I'm just saying, I think social media managers in particular, still need to be in the room more. I think it's come a long way where, as you and I started getting into this digital and social, we're never included in conversations. Now, people like me, kind of executive-ish type people are in the meetings, which is good. But I still think the people who, now, unfortunately, you can't clone your social media manager. So it would require them to be in more meetings and whatnot. But I still think it's worth it when you're working through big events, when you're working through, as I said, crises, when you're working through, hey, how are we going to make this big announcement? Your social folks need to be part of those conversations, and not just telling them, hey, this is what we're doing. And yeah, I hope it continues to get better. But it's come a long way. It's come a long way in the 10 to 15 years that we've paid attention to this stuff, but I still think it can be a lot more sophisticated and let the people who are running these things drive the bus, give them the keys. I know that a lot of the higher ups don't want to do that, but they know how to drive the bus a lot of times better than you do. So let us, okay. You can be next to them in case it starts going off the rails a little bit. But let them guide us a little bit more. If you look at, I'll keep going. I don't know what happened with Tennessee. In the Titans during schedule release, they posted two videos during schedule release. The main video they dropped at 8 o'clock was a wonderfully produced video. It took, I'm sure them, whether they did it internally, whether they used an agency to do it, I'm not sure. I think they probably did it internally, but it was wonderful. But then, of course, they posted the man on the street video that, you know, is just like a couple social people just being, hey, why don't we try this? And like, that's the magic that can happen when you listen to your social folks, instead of having like these big, long meetings with these big projects, like social folks can be a lot more nimble and come up with a lot more creative ideas. So we need to have them in a lot more of these meetings when we're talking about big tentpole events.
Oh, yeah. I would say it's a good place for us to cut off, Bill, but I'm going to ask one more question because I'm just going to keep you all day here. But we will get to that little shareable stat in just a moment. But I want to briefly touch on the athlete side. I mean, especially you guys had Cam Newton there. He was, and that was before like every athlete was on social necessarily, and he had his crazy font or whatever his copy was. But I guess as athlete platforms started to really blow up in your time, in the trenches, you know, I'm picturing times when like Snapchat stories was going off and you had to like really stay on top of that stuff, where you might miss what an athlete posted and not know that it was out there. That's just one microcosm of it. But as you see, even now, athlete platforms getting bigger and bigger, what's the role of the athlete, what's the role of the team, even are they better off supporting the athletes getting messages out there just as much as they are putting time and resources into their own platforms? Like, where do you see the role of the athlete? How do you see it play out in your time with Carolina, and what's the future? Let's look ahead. What's the future look like for the power of these athlete platforms and how they, you know, coexist alongside the teams?
Yeah, I think if they haven't already, athletes are more powerful than these teams and these brands. Now, it's not every athlete. It's not the 53rd guy in a roster isn't I mean, who knows? Look what Pat McAfee's done. But there's only one Pat McAfee. So it's not every guy in your roster, but you know, it's funny. We spend all this money on influencer marketing and we build these big influencer marketing programs, but all these teams have influencers already in the building.
Yeah.
How long we're going to be able to use them and team-led content, I'm not quite sure. Yeah, Cam was a perfect example where Cam knew his brand was much bigger than the Panthers. So Cam wouldn't do a whole lot for our stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, if Cam walked in the back hallway with his son and we happened to get it, then cool, we could post it. But would Cam do that necessarily for us? No. What the Bills have been able to do with Josh Allen to me is just incredible. And it goes back to the, you know, you asked me a question before about buy-in with general managers and head coaches and even with players. And my tangents haven't really answered your questions directly, but you look at what the Bills have been able to do with Josh Allen and have them being part of their content. That's so important. And it's really great right now. I don't know if Josh Allen will continue to do the next Josh Allen's will do that. Once this NIL gets more sophisticated and more athletes are going to be like, oh no, why would I have that on your channels? I'm going to put this on my channels so I can monetize that over there. I'm the draw. So these athletes are your own inside influencers. So use them as much as possible, which of course means building those relationships. It's the best influencers you can get, unless you can get, you know, like a Mr. Beast and stuff like that. Not the best influencers you can get, but it's the most convenient influencers you can get.
Totally. Oh, it's really interesting point to think about, and it's only gonna get bigger and more sophisticated, as you said, with NIL. Like, more college athletes are gonna come in with established brands and know their worth from day one.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Vikings used to do a podcast with Kirk Cousins, and when I was at the Panthers, I was like, who could we have do a podcast? I never really got to that point. But yeah, if you're Kirk Cousins now, you're not doing a podcast for the Vikings. You're doing a podcast for either your own podcast network or a podcast network, because you're going to get – that's just where things have gone. So I do think a lot of the stuff where we're able to use athletes right now on teams, it may not last for too much longer. I think right now it's cool, but I don't know if that's how it's always going to stay.
Yeah, so many areas that we still have to cover. You and me, Bill. Just really fun picking your brain here, but we're gonna have some more fun with you in our kickers segment. So that's coming up. A first episode shareable stat coming at you right now. Man, just such good stuff with Bill. Both could really pick his brain all day, and you're gonna want to stick around because with our quick hitting question segment coming up, we get a lot more good stuff from Bill, so stick around for that. But first, this episode's shareable stat. This episode's shareable stat comes from a recent study by Two Circles. You may know Two Circles. They are a sports consulting agency, among other things. They did a study about the development of fandom. And the shareable stat I'm going to pull out today is 80%. 80% of fans who have a full network of other passionate fans also are highly passionate fans themselves. So what does that mean? That means when you are surrounded by other passionate fans, you also tend to be a highly passionate fan yourself. And that is compared to 25% of fans that only have part of their network that are passionate fans. 25% of those fans are going to be highly passionate. And just 10% of fans are highly passionate that don't have any other passionate fans in their network. So what does that mean? Not too surprising, fandom is contagious. When you have other fans around you, that adds together, there's synergy. You guys are all become more highly passionate fans. And what does that mean if you work in the sports space? How can we make sure that we are bringing fans together and making sure that highly passionate fan base, it adds to each other? It has a snowball effect. How can we do that? How can we make sure that we are driving more social networking among fans? You know, one of my favorite things when I worked in the social media space for sports is when there are relationships formed through fandom, when fandom is that connective tissue, and teams can be connective tissues in a community, among a fan base, among a social network, not just a digital social network, but a real social network as well, the original, the community network kind. So how can we foster those kinds of relationships, those kinds of connections, to make sure that other highly passionate fans have a reason to discover other highly passionate fans and become a part of a social network? Whether it's, you know, can there be intramural sports leagues through a sports team organizes. Maybe is there a daycare that you can organize through a sports team? Can you create other opportunities, whether it's a fantasy league or learning opportunities or outings? We have some kids clubs. You have some various watch parties and outings of that nature. But how can a sports team really truly become a community connective tissue that creates these friendships, creates these networks? Can you have a pen pal program? Can you have a randomly assigned text friend to text with during a game? There are so many opportunities to really drive social connections with the team or the sport being that connective tissue. So that's just a shareable stat. Lots to think about, lots to talk about and ponder about. But more importantly, again, that shareable stat is 80% of fans who have a full network of other passionate fans are going to also be highly passionate fans themselves. Lots of good stuff in that study by Two Circles, so look it up. I linked it up on my Twitter feed at NJH287. But more importantly, again, stick around because lots of good stuff coming from Bill Voth of Bill Voth Digital. Back in this episode of Charitable Stat, I'm joined on the line once again by Bill Voth. Bill, you kicked ass in your interview, had so much fun geeking out and getting insights. Are you now ready to do some kickers?
Sure. And you told me it'll be like a lightning round. So since I tended to keep my answers pretty long in the first segment, I will do my best to keep them as short as possible in this one.
Hey, it's a podcast. We can go as long as we want. So I might even ask you some follow-ups to be on the lookout. Number one for you, though. This could be a fun one here. From your time as a local broadcaster, tell me the most memorable day or story. Like, what's that one day or story that sticks out to you from your time as a local anchor?
It's a good question. I would probably go 2006 when Little Davidson College and Steph Curry beat Georgetown on a Sunday afternoon. I'd been telling people about Steph for a couple of years, and rarely am I right about things when I talk about things in sports. And I was right about that kid. And that was like, and that was really fun. And I loved college basketball growing up. I loved the idea of Cinderella, and to be able to be so close to a story like that with such good people was really great.
Oh, that's so, so cool. I mean, I can still close my eyes and picture that skinny old Steph Curry kid. And
yep.
Here we are now. One of the best.
Kept getting better.
Oh, that was a good one. Number two, you may have alluded to this already a little bit, but we'll get the specific answer here. Tell me the broadcaster or multiple broadcasters that you looked up to most as a kid growing up.
Yeah, there's certainly multiple, but I mean, Bob Costas, he's the GOAT, has been way overdone in our society, but he's the GOAT.
Totally. You're not going to get much better than him. And he did it across several sports too, which people don't even realize.
It wasn't just sports.
You mentioned that broadcaster that came into school one day when you were in seventh grade. Who was that broadcaster that came in and you first got to see in person? What was his name?
His name was Jack Corgan. He wasn't Cleveland Indians. He was actually Colorado Rockies, and he did ACC football, but he lived in Cleveland and was our receivers. He was a receivers coach at the high school I went to, St. Ignatius in Cleveland. So how he did the Rockies, I can't remember, but it was Jack Corgan.
Very cool. I loved hearing that anecdote. So I want to put a name to it. Number three, I'm trying to guess in my head about who you're going to answer this one. I'm not sure yet. So your favorite player you got to work with during your time with the Panthers and why?
Josh Norman. I know this is a podcast and you can't see me smiling. And one of the things you're taught very early on at Syracuse is you don't become friends with the people you cover. You can be friendly. So I've always been arm's length, which again, doesn't work in the social media world. I know a lot of social folks are not becoming friends with, and that's just, a line that I'll never really cross. But Josh still continuously puts a smile on my face. When he came back last year, it put a smile on my face. Josh is a kid who was literally sleeping on his brother's couch in college and made himself into, whether it was legit or not, the highest paid cornerback in the NFL in 2016 after he had a magical 2015 season. I was running my website in 2015, and as I talked about in the earlier segment, I was really good at turning content around really quickly. And when Josh Norman says something ridiculous after a game and I get that posted really quickly, well, I was able to monetize a lot of that stuff. So Josh was awesome that year. He knew what he was doing. He knew that he was giving us reporters he was helping us do our job, and then we were helping him market himself as well. So it was a mutually beneficial relationship.
Ah, I love that. I love when that synergy plays out and both sides get the benefit, or all sides, because the fans are another side to get the benefit as well in media. Oh, lots of fun there. That's a good one. Number four. We touched on a few other teams here and there in our conversation, but tell me the pro sports scene besides the Panthers, and maybe I'll force you to leave the state, the Carolina States as well, so you can't say Dan and the Canes. Tell me the pro sports scene besides the Panthers, whose content you admire and why.
Dan and the Canes are great. You can see he's doing what he did at the Panthers, which was, you're the Hurricanes. It's really hard to stand out if you're the Hurricane, and they're doing the same thing, and they do such a great job. But to go out of the state, I don't think there's any question that the Chargers are the best in American sports. It's they're playing another sport at a lot of levels. But please indulge me and let me say that I think actually the best in the world, and I can't say this with complete confidence because I haven't seen every social media account in the world, but I think Manchester City is the best in the world. They're the most well-rounded. But as far as in America, it's the Chargers.
Some great ones there. Yeah, the Chargers have been doing it for years too, from Joel to Jason and Megan, yep. all of them there. It's a fantastic team. All right, number five, the number one tip you give to someone that wants to work in sports media.
I would, you know, there's so many tips you could give. I would say, be aggressive, which isn't really a great tip because it can get you in trouble a lot. But in meetings, in ideation sessions, like, speak up, talk, be afraid to fail. Be afraid to say, hey, we should try this mini mic, and people look at you like you're crazy. Because you know what? That mini mic idea could become, it could become something where all these teams and all these other sports are using a freaking mini mic because you had enough confidence or you had enough guts. And maybe you didn't have confidence. Maybe you were scared to bring up your idea in the meeting, but you at least said it. And so speaking up in meetings, not dominating the meetings, but speaking up and being able to have a voice, no matter what level you're at, to me is the number one piece of advice.
Absolutely love that. I feel like it's a theme of our conversation too. And I have this reputation almost in my current job where I'm like the guy with the crazy ideas. And I love that. I embrace it. I think that's how you get those home runs. You're gonna have some misses, of course. You're gonna have some whiffs. But if you're not thinking outside the box, then you're just boring and you're in the box.
Absolutely.
Number six, going back in time with Carolina with the Panthers. Tell me the most memorable game from your time with the Panthers. The most memorable game.
Like I went to the Panthers in 2017, and that's the last time they made the playoffs. And so from 2018 through last year, there weren't a lot of memorable games, but certainly the most memorable had to be when Cam Newton came back in 2021 at Arizona. And my department got to live again. They got to smile again. They got to do content like they could again. And I'm almost even getting emotional about it now. That week in that game was so memorable because these content departments, you depend so much on winning and good feelings. There's a lot of content departments out there that we don't see the great work they do because they don't win. So we had something called a content graveyard, and so much of our good work was never seen because the Panthers weren't winning. So we got that feeling back of the team, the content team we could be, thanks to Cam Newton coming back and having that game against the Cardinals in 21.
That's so awesome. And I remember that day and seeing all that content. It was special, even me as a not necessarily a Panthers fan, but just knowing that emotion was playing out through the fan base and through the content. That's awesome to hear.
And let's be honest, like, we didn't do great numbers that weekend or that week because we were so good at our jobs. I mean, Cam Newton helped with that, right? But to be ready and be in position as a content team to be able to take advantage of those moments is why you build good content teams.
Yeah, no, that's a great, but that's why content graveyards need to exist. If your team does not have a content graveyard, you're not doing it right. You have to be ready for the moments, even if they don't end up playing out. Number seven. The athlete who's not currently in broadcasting or media that you think would have the most potential for such a role. Who's an athlete that you think would just make a great broadcaster?
I'm being way too localized on this podcast right now around these answers. I should really get out of Carolina, but I think Cam Newton, not in a traditional sense. Mm-hmm. Don't think he would be good on a desk. I don't think he'd be great in a booth. I think obviously some things happened with Aqib Talib over the past year where he's kind of disappeared, but I'm really fascinated by bringing someone into these broadcasts or just around these broadcasts. Or obviously you have the shoulder programming where just talk to us like normal people and fun. It's going to be around for a while, but like are broadcasters dressing in suits and ties? Is that what a younger generation is going to really connect with? No, it'll be someone like a Cam Newton just saying it how it is. Now, I think Cam has to let go of this whole, a lot of the things he's still saying out there. So I think that's, he's I love Cam, but he's hard to take seriously right now with some of the things he's saying. So if he can get rid of some of that stuff, and I just think he would connect in a lot of great ways that would help himself and probably not an old network, but a newer type of network.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool now. At least we're seeing some of the Manning cast type experimentations, but there's still some, like, you haven't quite got that crazy disruption yet that I think we could be seeing in the next few years.
Yeah, I don't think I would be interested to see what the demos are on the Manning cast, right? The demos is it's probably not all that diverse. I might be wrong, but how are we hitting multiple audiences with this content? They're going to make multiple audiences tune in.
And we're seeing the Dude Perfect going to come back with their broadcast on Thursday Night Football. One of these games coming up soon. Lots of fun stuff we're seeing, and we'll have to keep an eye out if Cam Newton becomes part of it and tones down a bit. number eight, I'm looking forward to this one. It's our food question. I was going to ask our food question, and there's some a great food areas down there in Charlotte. So tell me, I come down there, you and me hang out in Charlotte. Tell me the best meal to get in Charlotte and where we're getting it.
It's pretty presumptuous of you to think that we would hang out if you came down here, but I would let you buy me a meal at Alexander Michael's. It's not, I'm not going to say barbecue because I'm imagining that's what everyone would say. So Alexander Michael's is just this really quaintish type restaurant near the stadium. Get yourself a London broil sandwich or this Cajun pasta they have. And Alexander Michael's is where it's at.
Hey, London broil sandwich sounds right up my alley, so yeah. we're there, man. Number nine, tell me of the most important trait for a leader and the most important lesson that you learned as a leader.
Most important trait in a leader is to trust the people you've hired. Now hopefully they're going to execute, but as long as you're the people you've hired can execute, trust your experts. The whole reason you've hired them is because hopefully they can do things 10 times better than you can. And if you can build a team of people like that, and you've built a really good team. As far as the most important lesson I learned, I learned so many lessons. And if I do lead a team again, I hope to be much better as a leader. I think having empathy and leading with empathy in the digital and social space, I could go on and on and on. This is going to be a lightning round question though. Burnout is so prevalent right now. I was not intentional enough for myself, but especially for my team and forcing people to take a step back. We build these great teams and we're not going to keep them because we're just going to burn everybody out. So having empathy when it comes to people's personal lives and some sort of work-life balance and being human with them, I think is in doing a better job at that, I think is something I want to take into my next opportunity.
Excellent answer on all fronts. Really, really appreciate that. And I can tell that you've been well introspective and reflective of your time throughout your career. All right, number 10, we're going to end on a light one. You're a Super Bowl winner. Who's going to win the Super Bowl in 2024? Depending on when someone's listening to this podcast, if you're listening to it, if it's the year 2025, Bill may sound like an idiot. He may sound really smart. Who's going to win the Super Bowl in 2024?
Can I say my Browns? No, I can't because that would be stupid. So I would say Kansas City, but I don't think the receiving staff is good enough. So I will go with the Eagles.
Eagles, they've gotten close with Jalen already. So yep. Totally happen. All right. You heard it here first. Go place your bets if your state allows it. All right, Billy, you kicked ass in our kicker segment. Your chance to take over for me. Tell us your social media all-star to follow. Just tell us who they are, what platform or platforms that they're on, and why they're following.
Yeah, so I did write this one down because I saw you were going to ask this one. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but I just recently stumbled upon him on LinkedIn. His name is Alex Coppola.
Yeah.
Coppolo. He just started a sponsored content newsletter. Mm-hmm. He's done digital partnerships with MSG and the White Sox. And this guy gets it. as far as connecting content with the sales side. And he understands, like, hey, this is how you do good sponsored content, not just sponsored content, and how it really can hit just as good, if not a lot of times better, than what we would consider organic content. So I'm going to reach out to him somewhat soon and just be like, Alex, I really appreciate your stuff. So I don't know him. I've just recently stumbled upon him, but I thought he was someone to bring up.
That is a great one. Yeah, check him out. He's pretty active on LinkedIn. And of course, you can subscribe to his recently launched newsletter, SponCon Sports. It's a great shout out. And how about you, Bill? Where can we find you as well as all things Bill Both Digital on the interwebs?
Yeah, I've kind of gone underground a little bit, which is So all you can really find me at right now is Bill Voth on Twitter and Bill Voth on LinkedIn. That's where my biggest presences are right now, as I build some stuff and figure out where I go with from there.
Hell yeah. As you can see, as you've learned today, Bill definitely knows his shit. You can work with him and watch out for where your next chapter takes you as well. But Bill, just kind of thank you enough for coming on the podcast today and sharing your insight, your expertise, your wisdom, just really good stuff. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Neil. It was fun. It was, you made me wait 200 some episodes, but hopefully it was worth it.
I'll have you back on before episode 400. I promise.
That's very nice of you.
Just a tremendous episode. These are the kind of interviews that are the reason why I started this podcast in the first place. Just could really talk to Bill all day and hear his lessons, hear his insights from his years with the Panthers and really in the space overall, as he and I myself have lived through this evolution and it's continuing to make sure that while we may get older, we don't fall behind. You know, we want to embrace what's new and what's coming and what's out there that the young people are doing and everything of that nature. So definitely follow Bill for more good insights, because cannot thank him enough for coming on the podcast today. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you for listening. I am your host, Neil Horowitz. Hit me up on Twitter, NJH287. Visit the website, dsmsports.net, where you can find every episode. Also on LinkedIn, where I post more content, connect with me there. And subscribe, follow along to the podcast so you don't miss an episode on your preferred podcast platform. Until next time, this is Neil Horowitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.